we have on the line Ken Geringer. The name of the book is Nobody Told Me. And Ken, I love the publisher.
Hipway Press, Book World.
I like it. Good book, by the way. Now, you had a story about this song.
You know, he was so thrilled that it was going up the charts. And, of course, he's seen that before and he's experienced that before. But Jack said he used to get excited like a little kid. You know, it's hard to imagine John Lennon getting excited like a kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he just was tickled pink that he was back in the business, I take it.
Yeah, I think we would have, you know, really seen John Lennon emerge had he not been shot. He was making plans with record producer Jack Douglas, and this is really why, you know, Jack lost not only his best friend, but he also lost his partner. I mean, they were making plans. I think they had a building picked out, and they might have even had a deposit on the building that they were going to turn into a studio. It was going to be John's personal studio, and he was going to have a room where he would record his music and a room where Jack would work and do other acts. Now, the first act that they were going to do together as a Lennon-Douglas production was going to be a Ringo album.
Yeah.
And that's where Nobody Told Me would have came in. That would have been Ringo's first song on the album.
The book is Nobody Told Me. Upstate, New York, we have the one and only Ken Geringer. And the reason I say that, Ken, is you've led a life like probably no one else. When you first started out there in Rockland County there at that free school, is that what you call that, a free school?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
alternative free school.
Yeah, did you ever dream that you would be doing the things you've been doing, there watching history unfold in the 70s in the world of rock and roll?
Well, the thing about me is I always did what everyone told me I couldn't do. If somebody told me I couldn't do it, then I had to do it.
Yeah, well,
I always went against the grain, but like I said before, I never compromised my philosophies or my beliefs.
Now, when did you decide you're going to write this book? Because you got some very good reviews on this book, by the way. In fact, it's available many places.
Well, you know, speaking about that, you know, I am getting great reviews on this book, but something really spectacular happened this week. You know, all the reviewers across the country have been comparing it to movies like Almost Famous, and there are two heavies that are putting bids in for movie rights. So it looks like Nobody Told Me is going to be a movie.
You can't give me a name yet?
I can't give you a name. I have names, but I don't want to jinx it.
Yeah, I understand that. Oh,
yeah.
Once you give a name... I was kind of half kidding, even though curiosity is killing me. Yeah.
No, but you know what? I am getting the great reviews from the newspapers and magazines, but my favorite review came from a reader in Iowa. And it's hysterical, this review. And it's posted first thing you see when you go to Amazon.com.
And, of course, that's a good place to buy the book.
That's where you go to see this review. It's called Review for Hubby from Loving Wife.
I like that already.
Yeah, it's great.
You know, there's some many things in this book that we, of course, don't have time to touch on in the hour or so that we have you here on the air. But, you know, we talked about John Lennon and Yoko Ono, but you had stories about other people in there,
Hello.
Too.
Do you want to hear something about Aerosmith?
Yeah.
Any Aerosmith fans out there?
Well, sure there are.
No, let's talk about the old days when they were spontaneous. Well, once they were in the studio, and they were taking about almost a year to do this record, and Stephen had come out of rehab, and he was writing lyrics on the walls in the bathroom at Record Plant, and they were going nuts like usual when they made a record, and they were working on this track, and they couldn't get the lyric right. The hook, if I remember correctly, went something like down on 57th Street. Now, Stephen had a connection to buy drugs on 57th Street, and I'm pretty sure that that's what down on 57th Street meant. Well, anyways, they took a break to go to the movies to see Young Frankenstein. Do you guys remember that movie?
Well, sure.
All right. Well, after the movie, while walking down Times Square, heading back to 44th Street, where Record Plant was, the producer, Jack, bends down like the hunchback in the movie, and he goes, "Walk this way." And before you know it, they're all imitating the hunchbacks.
Now,
Jerry, when I was told that story, I just like picture like a scene out of The Monkees. All these guys walking down the street as hunchbacks. So anyways, they get back to the studio, and Jack turns on the track that they were working on. And Steven starts singing, "Walk This Way." Now that's spontaneous.
Mm-hmm. Great story. Are you in the music business at all now, or are you just sitting up there writing books and waiting for a movie deal?
Well, I am right now the hardest working author in the United States. I am the only author that's on a 60-city book tour. Most authors do 6 cities. I'll tell you why I'm doing 60, because I don't know any different. I'm a rock and roller. Rock and rollers come in the tour bus.
You're used to that, aren't you?
They come in the morning. They do their morning shows. They go to their performance at night, and then they drive to the next town. So we're making a square around the map. We're actually going to do 60 cities. We start September 3rd. And I'm real excited about the tour.
Well, we'll be looking around, and we have listeners everywhere here on the net, of course, as well, and they will be...
I've got a website with all the tour dates and media dates.
Let's give that website address if you have a
head. It's simply nobodytoldme.com.
Nobodytoldme.com.
Can't forget that.
We have a link on our page on past guests, and we'll put that up there as well.
Great.
60 cities all over the country.
60 cities, 100 stops.
And that starts on September 3rd.
Yep.
And so what do you finish in November, October?
I finish December 15th. I'm going right up to Christmas. Okay. And I finish in Fort Lauderdale, Florida.
Right, back where you started.
You know, that's going to be the grand finale, Fort Lauderdale. They're waiting for me down there, probably with handcuffs.
Yeah.
And probably with two officers, with Yoko standing in the middle. That's my nightmare.
Yeah, right. So where is Yoko these days?
Well, first, guess
I mean, besides it getting down to Fort Lauderdale with the handcuffs, I'm waiting for you.
No, that's done that already. Yoko is 70 years old now. The last time I saw her was in 1995, and I gave her a copy of the original Beautiful Boy version that John did in Bermuda, because Jack always wanted to give that to Sean for his 18th birthday, but Jack hasn't been allowed near Sean, so I was able to give it to him. And I saw Yoko at that time, too.
Now, during the making of Double Fantasy, Jack and John were close friends, as you said, and business partners, and it was just a shock when the assassination happened. From what you tell me and from what I hear, there was no stopping John Lennon. He was on his way back to have even a bigger career than probably he had with the Beatles.
Yeah, you know, you know how we all felt. Can you imagine how Jack felt? You know, the only one that didn't, well, I shouldn't say this, but, you know, two days after John died, Yoko's boyfriend moved into the Dakota.
You're kidding me.
No, and another thing, John had a fear of cremation. You're going to die when you hear this one.
He even wanted to protest it. This sounds like the rerun of the Ted Williams story, only in reverse.
I could never get over this, and I heard this in the 80s, and it's been haunting me ever since. She had his body cremated, and she gave the ashes to Fred Seaman, and she asked him to carry it upstairs, and he put it down, and he walked away. Unbelievable stuff.
Scott, you got some questions here, Ken?
Well, just the perennial question that everybody asked John and asked Elliot Mintz, I think, asked him 1,000 times. I'm sure maybe you're familiar with the name Elliot Mintz.
Yeah.
He couldn't face John without a microphone, I don't think.
Elliot Mintz is the FBI guy who Yoko hired, an ex-FBI guy. Everyone, like I said, reported to Yoko, most of John's inner circle. And from what Jack used to tell me, whenever Elliot would come into the studio during the sessions, John would just go, oh, and try to go in the other room. And all this stuff about Elliot being John's best friend and all that, that's not what I've heard.
Yeah, there's a lot of people, and it's the same thing with Elvis, of course, that today we were such a good friend of John, and I was his trusted confidant. And
there was only one person who was a good friend of John, and that was his assistant, Fred Seaman. Now, that's the guy who was always around John, and Yoko had him arrested for stealing stuff. I know the inside story about that one, too, if you want to hear it.
I absolutely want to hear this.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that, too.
Okay, well, Fred Seaman wrote a book, and he exposed a lot of stuff, just sort of like what I'm talking about today. And Yoko was furious about this book, and she had her head guy, Elliot Mintz, get on the case. And when John was alive, people used to give him everything. People used to send him, Sony used to send him recorder. Everyone felt like if I had a product and I'd give it to John Lennon and he'd use it, my God, could you imagine, you know, John Lennon using my electric razor or anything? So he used to get just tons of stuff. And Yoko was a businesswoman and she had everything cataloged. But John never cared about that. So once in the studio, Jack heard Elliot say that he's going to, after work, he's going to go buy a tape recorder. So John said, no, just go in the room and take whatever you want. But Elliot never abused that privilege. And Fred never abused that privilege. So Fred would go in there at times and take things with John's blessing. Now Yoko knew of this, and after John died, and after this book came out, Elliot Mintz and her had the FBI go into Fred's house looking for stolen things, and things were there that John gave Elliot. I mean, that John gave Fred.
Yeah.
And then Fred got arrested, and he really, you know, took a bad rap.
Wow. You'd think the FBI had better things to do.
Well,
never mind.
She's a very powerful lady.
Now, how about The Who? You mentioned them a little earlier. This was an interesting group.
Yeah.
Did Jack produce some of their sessions?
Jack did the album, The Kids Are All Right. He engineered that. And he was actually, you know, he was a kid then, Jack. And Keith Moon used to sneak him into these, like, discotheques in New York City that no one knew about on like, the 15th, 16th floor of a building. And he said he actually was there when Keith Moon was swinging on a chandelier. It actually happened.
I just on our memory show, I think last night or night before, we mentioned the fact that Keith Moon, on a tour up in, I believe it was Flint, Michigan, or someplace, some smaller town in Michigan, drove a Cadillac, or no, it was a Lincoln, I think, into a swimming pool.
Yeah, all those stories are true about him.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
He really was a nutty guy.
Wild and crazy, I guess.
You know, a lot of that album, The Kids Are All Right, didn't get released. I think they're releasing some new stuff that Jack did back then.
Well, you know, there's the Who recorded a song called Happy Jack.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered if that was about him.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to play that in a little bit. Just thought I'd find out. Now, the book tour starts September 3rd. Going to end up in Fort Lauderdale on December 15th, you said. Huh?
Yeah, maybe I'll do a call-in from the road. I'm sure there's going to be some wild stuff happening.
Oh, you need to stay in contact with us.
I'd love to, Jerry.
And we'll be basically keeping up to date with you, and we're going to hold you to that promise to call us in from the road.
I would love to. Did Scott have another question?
Yes, he does.
Well, actually, and this would kind of could lead into a song we have here, if we want to do that. What did John ever say, as far as you know, about the Beatles actually reforming?
Well, you know what? Jack told me that there was a time when he was in the studio with John, and there was rumors that Paul called, and John thought it was about him and Paul writing together, and John was real optimistic about it, but that never came about. I think that there would have been a Beatles reunion.
Interesting. Hey, thanks very much, Ken. We are going to close out with Scott. You got a song that you think's perfect.
Well, this would be great. I thought of trying to think of a low key song to end it off on. And Ken, you may have never heard this, so this is just maybe something present for you because we've enjoyed you being on here.
You
so much.
You guys were great. Thank you so much. Delighted to have been here.
Now we're going to hold you to that phone call on the road and checking in. In fact, we'll make it a regular bit.
Thank you so much, guys.
And,
I'll be happy to call.
And Scott will be in contact with you by email as well, so you'll know how to get over there.
Okay.
Okay, now what is it, Scott? Set this up.
This track here, speaking of a Beatles reunion, so that led right into it, appropriately. Back in 95, there was a single release called Free as a Bird on the Anthology CDs, and that was a pretty big hit, top 10 hit. What we're going to hear on this is that same song, except with the electric instruments stripped off of it, the drums stripped off of it, John's original demo added to it, so what you just hear is just the pure acoustic guitars.
Scott, I have the original tape of this, the original cassette. I own it.
Well, this is. They went ahead and left Paul and George's harmonies on it, so
yep.
It's just John, Paul, and George, kind of unplugged in a way.
Yep.
So this is the Beatles unplugged and free as a bird.
Great, yep.
Hey, and thanks very much for being on the show, Ken. The book is called Nobody Told Me, and it's by Hipway Press, right?
Yeah, Hipway Press, Book World.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, here it is. And you own this tape, huh?
The original one I own, the one that John gave Jack.
We'll be looking forward to hearing from you while you're on the road, Ken.
You know what? I'd love to send you... Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, we're not on or anything.
No, yeah, hold on.
Scott Simon for helping us out tonight with the show, and of course Ken Geringer will be reporting back occasionally, and he has some John Lennon exclusive tapes he'll be sending us. Some of them will end up here on this show. Anyway, we've mentioned the Happy Jack, and I still think this was probably about the producer. Anyway, here they are. Who? The Who.
Happy Jack wasn't tall, but he was a man. He lived in the sand at the island. The kids would all sing, he would take from tea. So they rode on his head. Jack called the water clapping. And they couldn't prevent Jack from being happy. From me.